This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Say, dirtbag. This is Kid Schreiner, the voice of the Green Arrow, and you are listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam, streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
Get charged up for action that'll shock your system.
Tell me that's not cool.
An unstoppable superhero and his crew embark on impossible missions and will bring mutated villains to justice.
When Static's in the house, bad guys better step off.
Pull the plug on crime with the adventures of Static Shock. Yeah!
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the DCAU Review, episode 162. I am one of your hosts, Cal, and with me, as he is each and every week, my good brother and friend, the gentleman that operates our Twitter page. That's right. It's Liam. Liam, welcome to episode 162 of the DCAU Review.
That's right. It's the second week of June, and or it is when we're recording this and airing it for the first time. If you're listening to this several years from now, it's another day. But anyway...
Well, my mind just got blown.
I know. About that. Hello, the future. anyway, we are at this time, at this point in history, we are going through a month's worth of Static Shock reviews, and we've got another one today with the returning villain Rubber Band Man in the episode Bent Out of Shape.
That is right, Liam. And if you recall, we covered, I believe, in December of 2020, we had a month of Static episodes. So about 6 months ago, we covered an episode that featured Rubber Band Man, his initial appearance in Static. So if you're interested in checking that out, you can go back in the archives at DCAUReview.com or wherever you stream your podcasts, and definitely check that out. I believe that's They're Playing My Song, if I recall. So that one, if I recall, there was some fun to be had with that one. So we will dive into this week's episode to see if we can have even more fun. But before we do that, we each and every week kick off, before we delve into our own analysis and recap of the episode, and then of course giving our scores for our various four categories here, we always supply the listeners with the official IMDb synopsis for this week's episode, reminding you that the IMDb synopsis is indeed crowdsourced, meaning that we always get to give our own personal opinion on it at the end here, Liam. But before let's get into that. Before you do, we'll remind the listeners, this episode actually originally aired on the Kids WB back on the 27th of January, 2001, meaning we just passed the 20-year anniversary of this episode debuting, Liam.
That's right. And this is for the episode Bent Out of Shape, which was written by Dwayne McDuffie, directed by Dan Reba, with music by Stanley Clark, and animation by a duo of studios, Slightly Offbeat Productions and Top Draw Animation. And that synopsis reads as such. Sharon's new boyfriend, a musician, is revealed to be Static's old nemesis, Rubber Band Man, who recently escaped from prison. This time, Rubber Band Man will stop at nothing to reveal Static's secret identity.
Will he? Is that what happened in this episode?
Well, and we can jump into the plot. There's one scene where he tries to unmask him.
Yeah, that's not at all. That gets an F. I give that. That's similar to what we encountered with one of the episodes last week, where the synopsis said that the villains were out to try and kill Static, when in fact it was a heavily debated topic about killing him or not. So 2 weeks in a row here, we've had some crowdsourcing synopsis. It clearly didn't watch the episode. They just like looked at the art on the DVD box or something like that.
Yeah, I guess. Or yeah, they thought that scene where they fight in the alley was the end of the episode. One or the other. But yeah, so this episode is, as we jump into plot here, it's not good.
Well, you could turn off the episode now because you've heard our synopsis. But yes, I would agree with you. But why do you feel that it's not good, Liam?
Yeah, so. So we start out and Richie and Virgil and Daisy are going to a concert for this hot new act that's taken Dakota by storm. There's a line a mile long. They're trying to get tickets. It's sold out. They're really upset that they can't get in. And then Virgil's sister Sharon walks up and is like, "No worries, guys, I'll get us in." And Virgil and Richie are kind of making fun of her and saying, "No way." And yet she goes up to the bouncer, speaks to him for a few seconds, and is given a VIP pass. Come to find out that not only does Virgil's sister Sharon know Stringer, she is in fact dating and has been for a little bit now. And so she's able to get all of Virgil and his friends in. The concert starts. There's sort of a brief aside where Stringer and his producer are arguing over whether or not there should be pyrotechnics at the show because it's a smaller venue and they're afraid it might be a fire hazard, but Stringer insists on doing the full show.
But Mr. Stringer, 2 minutes. On my way. Why don't you guys find your seats? I'll see you after the show.
Yo, V, look, a table full of free food. And it looks lonely. We better go keep it company.
Stringer, I'm worried about the fireworks.
Why? We've never had a problem before.
But we've never done them on a stage this small. It could be dangerous.
Look, my fans deserve a full show. I'm not cutting anything.
What if we worry too much, Mario? Nothing's gonna happen.
Yo, Lenny! Stringer in the house!
And didn't you know it, a fire starts. And Static puts out the fire and he goes to sort of confront Stringer because as Virgil, he witnessed Stringer sort of laughing off the producer who wanted him to cut the fireworks. He grabs his arm and wouldn't you know it, the arm begins to stretch.
Yeah, it's like Virgil had no chill though. Like he didn't care. First of all, he changes into his Static costume behind an amplifier, which, okay, everybody was distracted because of the fire, I guess, so nobody would have been paying attention. But he shows up in the club already that was a sold out, like what are there, like 200 people in there? So you can pretty much whittle down who Static is based on the fact that he shows up in the club after the fire starts at this point. And then he goes up and confronts Stringer, letting him know like, yeah, I heard that you got warned. There would have been an even smaller amount of people that would have been able to have heard this sound engineer or whoever he was come up and warn Stringer that there could have been a fire started to begin with. So he really is gives no craps about his secret identity in this two scenes.
And that actually maybe could have been an interesting road to take this down if we want to try to rewrite or rebook this episode. A little bit here is that if the point was he was sort of endangering these people and Static couldn't prove it because the evidence he obtained or is his own eyewitness testimony as Virgil, that could have been like an interesting angle to take. But Stringer sort of immediately cops to it. And he's like, yeah, well, let's not talk about that right now. He should have just lied. He's like, you weren't Static. You weren't there. Like, you don't know. Like,
Right. How would you know that? That was between me and the guys. But you're right. Yeah, he doesn't. He just freely admits to it right away. And as you said, he pulls on his arm and his arm sort of elongates. And Static recognizes immediately as Rubber Band Man, and Stringer doesn't even try to explain it away. He just says he apologizes to Sharon and said that he wanted to tell her, but you know, he couldn't at this point because you know, he was scared to.
This fire was your fault and you know it.
What?
He was warned about the fireworks and he went ahead with them anyway.
Now's not the time for this. Come on, Sharon.
You're not going anywhere. Ugh.
Stringer?
Try Rubber Band Man.
I was afraid to tell you, Sharon. I'm sorry.
Nice apology, but it's not enough. I'm taking you back to prison.
I'm not going anywhere, especially not with you. I had everything going for me this time, and you ruined it again.
I didn't ruin anything. You did it to yourself.
So he's actually gone back to his roots in creating music, which is interesting. If you recall, that was he was responsible for creating some beats in that were stolen, which created him, you know, allowed mm-hmm. him to sort of take revenge in the previous episode. So him going back to his musical roots was interesting, at least. But the story doesn't get much better from there.
Yeah. So. They have a brief scuffle, Static and Rubber Band Man. Rubber Band Man escapes and makes a comment, which is, I think, is maybe where our IMDb synopsis gets it from, about he's going to expose Static to the world the next time they meet. So yeah, in the meantime, there's a few minutes of Sharon being very sad and kind of moping, and they establish at some point that like paparazzi is kind of surrounding the Hawkins house, and their father is very, very upset and taking phone calls from reporters and rips the phone off the wall at one point. He's so frustrated. And it's clear that Sharon's very broken up about it. But then there's the B plot of the episode is Rubber Band Man tracks down Static, who is out looking for Rubber Band Man. And they have a fight where Rubber Band Man pulls Static's mask off and throws him into a dumpster. But as he's about to discover Static's identity, these two other metahumans show up. These two other Bang Babies show up that we had seen, I guess, one scene prior. Puff and Onyx making their series debuts here. And they've decided, rather than be superheroes, rather than be supervillains with their powers, they're going to be bounty hunters. And so they attack Rubber Band Man and therefore sort of inadvertently save Static from having his identity exposed here.
Yeah, it's inadvertently. And these are two interesting characters, which end up being recurring characters later on. So at least there's some redeeming value that these characters, both Rubber Band Man does return at some point, and this Puff and Onyx character also return. And it was also somewhat refreshing, I guess, for the characters that are gifted with these powers. Puff is talking to Onyx and she mentions that some of the Bang Babies are villains and some of them are heroes, and what are they? They're just losers. And you know, that's where she realizes that there's a bounty out for Rubber Band Man. They figure that they can make some quick money since they've quit school. But that was at least somewhat refreshing. It you know, it's not just a straight up, they're not a straight up villain, they're not a straight up good guy, they're in that gray area. So the fact that not every single Bang Baby immediately turned to crime is at least some variation within the storytelling for the show.
Looks like sourdough today.
Other metahumans, they're superheroes or even supervillains. But look at us.
Yeah, maybe quitting school wasn't such a good idea.
There you go again. Next thing you'll be saying is we should get regular jobs and we... Do you know about this?
Puff, I don't think journalism pays very well.
The reward, Onyx. The reward. If we can catch Rubber Band Man, we'll be rich. and we'll also be the top bounty hunters in the city.
Bounty hunters, huh? I could get into that.
So could I.
Yeah, no, I think they're maybe the most fun part of the episode for me.
For sure.
There's some good banter between them, and Puff is a pretty good foil and a bad guy or bad girl in this case. She has some pretty funny quips and stuff, and that sort of creates the conflict. But yeah, it is they're sort of thrown in as the real villains, but at the same time. I guess we talked about this a little bit off air. Generally, especially when it's a Dwayne McDuffie script, and certainly with a lot of these Static episodes, there's usually some sort of deeper purpose to the story they're telling. There's usually some kind of either social commentary or, you know, sometimes political commentary or something.
At least a moral to the story.
Correct. And that doesn't really exist here. Like, there's a little bit where, you know, Sharon kind of convinces Rubber Band Man to turn himself in after she has a conversation with her father, where she says, you know, he's a good guy, you know, he's just made a few mistakes, and her father sort of tells her, well, that very well may be true, but he's still got to do the right thing and do his time, and then he can try to make a fresh start of it afterwards. And like, I guess there's a little bit of something there, but it's pretty like if our moral is, you know, somebody that broke the law and tried to kill people should go to jail, like, I don't think that's like the strongest. That's not that, you know, that's not exactly breaking new ground or really kind of hammering home a specific moral. But
right.
But yeah, my other note that I want to mention is so as Stringer or Rubber Band Man escapes Puffinonix the first time, and as we said, Sharon and Robert are having this sort of argument about him. He sneaks into the Hawkins house and talks to Sharon, and finally she calls her father again. He agrees he's going to turn himself in, and it cuts to Puffinonix in a like surveillance van.
Who? My father.
Puff, good thing we borrowed this truck.
You see him?
Yeah, you were right. Rubber Band Man finally showed up here.
They've hacked into the Hawkins phone. They're tapped into the phones. Which, if you remember, in the first scene, as you mentioned, Cal, they were apparently so poor that they were having to fish food out of a dumpster.
Right.
Outside of a fancy restaurant.
Right.
And talking about how they had nowhere to go and they had nothing going on.
And they were school dropouts.
Right. Suddenly, and we don't see them steal it. It's not established that like one of them was like, you know, going to school for like studying like criminal justice or something, or was in the FBI or something. So we don't know where they got this van, or how they knew how to like tap phone lines and stuff like that, but they, and so they overhear.
Love the line that Onyx has. Thank goodness we borrowed this van. What? Borrowed it
from who?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't get much more detail than that, but yeah, that sort of sets up the finale of the episode. Virgil and Richie come back to the house, and after some sort of brief comedy of Rubber Band Man disguising,
I was going to say the episode turned into either like it turned into an episode of Frasier, essentially, like like he has to keep Rubber Band Man has to keep disguising himself as various pieces or equipment or furniture in the house, and Sharon has to keep trying to explain to Static, and Static Rubber Band Man turns himself into a chair, and Static sits on him, and he's like. What? Yeah, it became a comedy scene almost immediately at that point. And then, wouldn't you know it, Puff and Onyx show up. Puff dressed up as a police officer. Static recognizes her from their brief interaction before, and slams the door in her face, only for Onyx to come back and create a giant hole in the Hawkins house, which draws Rubber Band Man out by threatening Sharon. They pursue after Rubber Band Man and Puff, whose powers up until this point had been seen that she like uses her breath to like what essentially looked like blowing acid, suddenly in this final scene can now be knockout gas apparently, and she literally gives an exposition that says, yeah, sometimes it's acid, sometimes it's knockout gas, as if you were sitting there, which I was, going, wait a minute, why are her powers now different? And she gives some nice exposition to explain that, yeah, it's sometimes it's just different.
Yeah, so her powers are, so she can fly. She like her the bottom half of her body turns into smoke, like she's the genie from Aladdin. So that's one of her powers. Her second power, which we see throughout most of the episode, as you mentioned, is her blowing puffs of smoke, which are apparently contain like acid vapors. She melts like a wall and side of a building, melts the trash can lid that Static is surfing on at one point because he's lost his reusable disc at one point, his flight disc. We've established that, and then all of a sudden she blows the puff into his face, and I'm like, is she gonna try to melt him? it's knockout gas now. And yeah, there's sort of this brief final fight. They end up under the bleachers at a like outside of like a football stadium or something. They're
not really described as to what it was,
but they and basically Static sort of outsmarts her by getting her to blow her ass. She's back to acid at this point. I guess the mood changed, and she's back to acid, and she blows all of her acid clouds right through all of the support beams, and Static basically lets the bleachers collapse on her and Onyx, and then he and Rubber Band Man kind of come face to face one final time, and after a little bit of intervention from Sharon, Rubber Band Man agrees to first dig out Puff and Onyx from the rubble and then turn himself in.
Yeah, so you know he's redeemed now. He's a good guy. he dug the not villains out from underneath of the bleachers, and you know he's gonna go do his time and be redeemed. You know, he's got a good heart now.
Yeah, this will be followed up in future episodes, which we will certainly get to eventually down the line. But I think in general I like the idea of a one of these recurring villains kind of deciding to go on the straight and narrow. I like the idea of exploring the redemption for a super villain and things like that. I think that could be really fun. But as this episode being used as sort of the catalyst for him changing from villain to hero, or villain to at least not villain anymore. I don't know. It didn't feel. I guess the idea is he's so in love with Sharon that she sort of softened his heart, and he's willing to kind of do his time because that's the only way he could be with her or whatever. But overall, and I guess we can start getting towards scores here. I just, like I said, in a vacuum, I think there's an interesting story somewhere in here. Virgil's sister dating one of his enemies could be an interesting story. You know, Virgil having a villain trying to expose his identity, it could be an interesting story. Virgil having to defend one of his enemies from other enemies who are trying to capture him or kill him or whatever. Like, these could all be interesting stories in their own right, but as it all, it just didn't come together in a way that really worked for me. And for all those reasons, I ended up with a 4 out of 10 for plot.
I could not agree with you more, although I will say that I gave a score just a tick higher. I went a 5 out of 10 for plot. I did enjoy Onyx and Puff. I think they're an interesting combination. Like I said, going the different route and not just making them straight up villains, because really they're not doing anything wrong by trying to collect a reward for turning in the guy that's running from the police. but
right.
You know, I guess the way in which they decide to do so is somewhat destructive, and that's where it comes in that they're not just straight up good guys, but
and the illegal surveillance.
Yeah, and the borrowing of the equipment was probably you have to figure there was some sort of nefarious scheme or scam that involved, you know, borrowing said van. So yeah, very, very kind of disappointed with this one, especially based on you know, the last episode with Rubber Band Man in it. Had some heart, it had some interesting beats to it. I think that we both for that episode agree that he was a pretty sympathetic character, and in this episode it's very odd that they went the route, there's his motivation is not very clear as to what, like, what's the point, like, oh, he got exposed and he's Rubber Band Man, but he's out of prison, he did his time in prison, so why is all of a sudden, you know, why is it now that he decides that he's going to got to go back to being Rubber Band Man to, you know, exact his revenge against Static, who exposed the fact that he was kind of culpable for this fire. Like, it's a very thin motivation for me for a guy that just got out of prison and really didn't do too much in that first episode that was unjustifiable, based on the fact that he was, you know, getting stuff stolen from him and all of that. So I don't know, it, that was kind of disappointing that this character who I liked a lot from that first episode was seemingly somewhat misused and just kind of turned into a bland, plain character for this one.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely think that's part of it when you're comparing it to such a strong episode that we really enjoyed. And, in a previous review, I think that definitely played into it a little bit here. Yeah, it just doesn't really iron out. We don't really get to explore, like, despite the fact that Sharon is a pretty important part of the story, like, we don't really understand, like, what it is about him that she likes, or, like, how they met, or any of that stuff.
Right.
Yeah, it's very much sort of focused through the lens of, and I get it, it's Static show, it's Virgil show, so it's more him just reacting to all of this stuff. But yeah, like, that maybe would have been a more interesting way to see things and maybe have the finale of the episode be more a more sort of direct confrontation between Static and Rubber Band Man, where she sort of intervenes in a more direct way, maybe would have been more interesting. But hey, you know, there's some swings and there are some misses. Nobody bats a thousand.
Very true. And if you're interested in hearing our review of that original Rubber Band Man episode, They're Playing My Song, it was part of our double feature back on episode 136. So you can check that out in the archives on your favorite podcast app or at dcaureview.com. Moving on, Liam, I wish we had something that was yet again not a swing and a miss, but dare I say, as we move into our visual category here, that this episode is not good. As far as animation is concerned, I think there are some interesting visual gags that are done here, especially in that comedy, somewhat comedic scene there where Rubber Band Man has to keep hiding from Virgil. But it's kind of left to be desired, and a lot left to be desired for this episode, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, these two studios that sort of teamed up for the animation here, Slightly Offbeat Productions and Top Draw Animation, they were not used terribly often. They were mostly paired with each other, so it seems like maybe they were the overflow studio when Coco and Dong Yang and a lot of the regular studios that Warner Brothers and DC Animation used were maybe their plates were a little full, then these folks would get a little bit of work. Slightly Offbeat did a lot of, like, they did some Disney cartoons as well as some PBS stuff, and Top Draw looked like they had done a good amount of anime stuff as well as some my and some other sort of younger children cartoons, and, you know, obviously nothing wrong with that, but it just did not feel like a lot of this episode didn't feel consistent, and And we've talked about how it can be jarring going from, say, a Batman the Animated Series or a Justice League into these earlier static seasons, especially. But even per the standards, like, I think we've done enough of these early static episodes now that we kind of have established our baseline for, you know, what is on and off model, what constitutes good and what we feel is good or bad when it comes to this sort of specific style of animation and character designs and all that. And one of the things that the first thing that came to mind is people's character models are just wildly changing throughout this episode. Head shapes, head sizes, length of neck, like the sizes of like their lips and their expressions on their face. Like, it's very, and maybe that comes from these are two studios that are used to doing like I said, programming for younger children, where you're doing big expressive faces and there's more change in that kind of stuff. But yeah, I just felt like there were some, the character designs were immediately like, there's something a little off here for me.
There was a lot off, and I felt like every character had the characteristic of Rubber Band Man and just stretching and being weird and goofy. I think you're spot on with different models changing. I felt like at times people looked like they were kind of like walking on an angle, or like we had some warbliness of it. Some of the characters were kind of like vibrating and shaking a little bit, and just not good.
There's definitely some scenes also where I guess it's just the way it's framed, and I don't know if this is a choice by the studio or by the director, in this case Dan Reba, but they're sort of filmed at like a weird angle, like you're saying, like some, but even like some of the backgrounds are like a little bit crooked. Like we're on like a, I believe the camera angle is called a Dutch angle. Like you would see that in like the 60s Batman show or something.
Right.
Like there's some real weird perspective for sure.
Yeah. It was an odd choice. And you know, I wonder if some of it is the fact that both, you also have two studios that I believe you said are in two different countries working on this, instead of one, you know, one office, or even in one specific country where, you know, there might be some language barriers or communication stuff that's happening between the two of them if they have to work together or what have you. But it does not feel like a solid piece throughout, which is a shame, because Rubber Band Man is such an interesting character, and there are some interesting visual gags that they get to do. One where he disguises himself as a satellite dish, a cable satellite dish, I thought was interesting. And you know, he disguises himself as a vacuum later, and mentioned already he disguises himself as a chair. So there's you know, some interesting, at least visuals. I was a little disappointed in the transformation between his stringer persona and Rubber Band Man. I think the first one is somewhat interesting, but he goes right into that purple costume that I guess is a part of him. And then he later on, there's another transition where that happens, and he more or less just phases into the Rubber Band Man persona. From the Stringer persona, there's not as much transformation. So I felt like there were some corners that were cut there. I will say, I think that the character designs for Puff and Onyx are pretty cool. I think they have a unique look to them. And again, it'll be interesting to see what happens when they return later on. But it's a lot of inconsistent animation and not a lot visually that caught my attention or that was redeemable, I would say. So for all of those reasons, I ended up giving animation and visuals a 3 out of 10.
Wow. Yeah. I'm right in that same ballpark. I went 4 out of 10. Yeah. I think the most fun is still the Rubber Band Man stuff, but you mentioned this, and this maybe delves into plot more than animation here, but so it's established that, okay, this purple suit that he wears when he's in his Rubber Band Man persona, I guess that's just part of his skin, like, or at the very least, yes, it can change like his skin. I think we discussed this a little bit in the first episode too. But my question is then, if he can do that, if he can make clothes that are a different color, it's not like Stringer's outfit was not a purple and white suit. It was like red, right, and he had like a do-rag on and all this stuff. So he can make clothes out of his skin, or this suit can change into clothes for him, whatever. So why was the satellite dish and the trash can and the chair and the vacuum cleaner, why did they have to be
purple with
rubber
eyes?
Band mitt? Yes.
Yeah, that's a good question, other than for the viewer at home to go, oh, that's Rubber Band Man, he's right there,
right?
The static,
right?
There's and no for, purple for some... satellite dishes or purple your sister doesn't own a purple vacuum.
yeah and there's like there's like a throwaway line where she's like dragging him as this vacuum cleaner, and she's complaining that he didn't put wheels on the vacuum. And he said, like, oh, wheels are hard. So if there was like a line where he's like, I really have to focus to change, like my change colors and stuff, I would at least be like, okay, whatever, sure. But they don't really imply that it's like physically hard for him to change his shape. So yeah, I don't know. It was just weird. But like I said, I think, yeah, there's some comedy there where he's disguised as the trash can, and Virgil kind of walks up and is poking it and then walks away, and then a dog comes up and is about to go to the bathroom on him, and then we cut back and the trash can has grown legs and the dog's biting one of his legs. It's very silly, very cartoony. But yeah, overall, like I said, it was just that nearly complete lack of consistency in character designs. And a lot of this episode is just two characters talking. So you really need those moments to be pretty strong, and this one just didn't measure up.
Agreed. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be music. There's nothing offensive this week. No lyrics accompanying the music, so that's three in a row here for static, so that always gets it at least an extra point in my score as far as music is concerned. But I wish there was more music stand out in this week to talk about, but I didn't find much other than the fight scene at the end, the music that accompanied that, and there's a couple of scenes that are punctuated by these random, like, that sound that you make when you like sit on a keyboard, but like, yeah, there wasn't a whole lot that I noticed musically outside of that. What did you have for musical notes?
Well, I think we would be remiss not to mention Stringer's guitar solo.
Of course, good point.
Yeah, the episode we see Stringer, who we're established is, as far as we know, legitimately has become like a big star. And as you said, based on the previous episode, we do know that Rubber Band Man does have quite a bit of talent, a lot of musical talent. But when we see him on stage, he's on this like small stage. There's not really like a set. It's just him on a stage. There's red curtains and he's playing the guitar. And it's very, I didn't quite get it, but you know, maybe that song goes on for 4 minutes and we just heard the intro before the fire started. But yeah, no, I thought like all the action sequences had pretty solid, what you would expect from a static episode. But yeah, it doesn't feel like there's a strong theme, I think a lot of the villains, lyrics or not, something like, somebody like Kangor, who we've seen a few times, has like this real specific theme that plays that's specific to his character. And I think Hot Streak and Ebon have each had their kind of own themes, or at least a style of music that accompanies when they appear. And I don't really feel like we had that for Rubber Band Man or for Puffin Onyx here. So yeah, nothing wrong with it, but nothing really stood out to me all that much. And that's why I gave music a 5 out of 10.
And I gave music a 6 out of 10. I think that extra point comes from not having music that was distracting, but it was fine. I think that the punctuating music for the fight scenes works out well, especially when Puff and Onyx sort of show up the first time, inadvertently saving Virgil's secret identity from being exposed. I didn't mention it in visuals either, but I did appreciate the comedy of that scene as well, as Virgil is sort of hiding in this dumpster and the dumpster's getting tossed back and forth, and they keep cutting back to him in the dumpster rolling around as it's being tossed. That was another comedy point that I appreciated, at least from the plot. But music wise, it's fine. It's not distracting, and I think that's the most of what I could have asked for in an episode that I already was not loving.
Yeah, you know, you take the victories where you can get them.
There you go. Absolutely. All right, Liam, I guess that moves us on to our final category for this week, which is going to be voice acting. So we have not a huge cast here, but we have some new characters being introduced, but one of them voiced by somebody who happens to be double dipping for this episode. But let's talk about this week's voice cast.
That's right, Cal, and you touched on it there. We have, of course, Kevin Michael Richardson, who we hear all the time as Robert, Virgil and Sharon's dad, but he's also pulling double duty as the voice of Onyx. And he's just kind of doing that classic kind of big, powerful monster that's a little bit dumb. Like it's a little bit comedic to it. Like I said, I think there's some fun kind of interplay with him and Kimberly Brooks, who plays Puff, who also has done quite a bit of voice acting, and in fact voices a character in the Mystery of the Batwoman animated feature, which we will get to someday down the road. Also playing off of Kevin Michael Richardson in that movie, in fact. But I think they're. As far as like fun stuff in this episode, I think they're playing off each other. And then, like I said, I think Kimberly Brooks as Puff, she's got some pretty funny lines, and she seems to really relish that I guess they're not technically villains, like you said, but when like her sort of quips with Rubber Band Man and then with Static later on in the episode are pretty fun.
The pretty ones are never very bright.
Who are you? What do you want?
Name's Puff. Mr. Sleepy over there goes by the name of Onyx. And what we want is you.
Bounty hunters, huh? Good luck.
You don't want to make this easy? No problem.
Yeah, I agree. I think that she and Kevin Michael Richardson have some decent chemistry, as you said, and they to me were the most enjoyable part of the episode, despite again not necessarily understanding where they are or how they are so resourceful at obtaining some of the equipment. Where did they get an official looking police uniform from? Don't know. But Puff has one of those enough to trick Sharon into thinking that she's a police officer when she comes to the door. So
maybe one of her other moods allows her to puff out a police uniform.
I like that theory. That's just as good as any other theory could be. So,
mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah. But I think that she's excellent in this. I'm sure it would be interesting to see more as she is a returning character. So we'll be interested to see how she does on future episodes, perhaps with more of a focus than the little bit that she has in here. But she has some back and forth with Phil Lamar's Static as well. There's some quipping that they do and it works well. I thought she was good.
Absolutely. Yeah. And otherwise we have a few minor players. We have Crystal Scales briefly as Daisy, Jason Marsden briefly as Richie, but other than the ones we've already talked about, Phil Lamar as Static, we of course have probably the two that get the most to do in this episode, being Michelle Morgan as Sharon and Kadeem Hardison returning as Rubber Band Man. They're fine.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think either of them are bad. I think Michelle Morgan as Sharon is like a little one note. Like she kind of like her being upset or trying to plead with her, you know, her new love interest to turn himself into the cops. She kind of speaks in the same tone of voice when she's doing that as when she's, you know, yelling at Virgil for not doing the laundry or something in another episode. Like it doesn't feel like there's a great deal of change in her vocal performance. And again, there's still some sort of funnier moments near the start of the episode and everything when she's trying to get Stringer to ditch Virgil and his friends. But like I said, I don't think they're bad, but neither one of them really stood out as like great to me.
And I think we've had better episodes with Sharon performances. I feel like, unfortunately, this episode does rely a lot on her to carry a lot of the dialogue. And I don't want to say that they had negative chemistry, but her chemistry with Stringer was severely lacking. I did not buy for one second that they legitimately cared about each other. And some of that could have also been dialogue that was written, but their performances also didn't come across as if they cared one little bit about each other. So I think that's going to be tough to give a good score when the main focus, which is the whole like main center point of the plot, is this romance between Static's sister and one of his arch supervillains. Those two don't really have a lot going for them together. And they're in a bunch of scenes together. It's kind of hard. I did laugh and chuckle at that, at the why didn't you make wheels on the vacuum line. But that was kind of my one, like, oh yeah, that was kind of cute. But I don't feel like they had a whole lot of chemistry working together.
Yeah, and I think Kadeem Hardison as Rubberband Man, he has a very sort of, I think, sort of an even keeled voice for a lot of this, and only really, I think, when he's interacting with Static do we get to hear him kind of express a little bit of that anger and sort of change things up a little bit. A lot of the stuff with Sharon, like we said, it just didn't quite click, I think, for either of us. I don't think they're terrible, but I don't think it's pretty good. And like you said, when it's sort of the main focus of the episode is this relationship, and you kind of need a little bit stronger of a performance. But you know, like I said, I think there's still some stuff to enjoy when it comes to the vocal performances, particularly from Puff and Onyx. So I ended up settling on a 5 out of 10 for voice acting.
Nice. With the same exact score for that one, I gave it a 5 out of 10 as well. Middle of the road, we get double dipping of Kevin Michael Richardson, who is great and
he's awesome.
I think in both roles, I don't feel like they did enough to sort of make his voice that different. Like, it was pretty obvious to me right away. It's like, oh, Kevin Michael Richardson is doing two voices in this episode, especially because you have Static's dad's pretty prominently featured in the episode also. So doing something to have altered his voice a little bit, I think, or further altered his voice for Onyx probably could have behooved them. But with that said, Static doesn't have a whole lot of opportunity, I feel like, to really shine, because the focus so much is on Sharon and Stringer and their romance. So for all those reasons, I think middle of the road is pretty on point for both of us. It makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Liam. Well, that will begin to wrap us up. So we will end up with our final scores here. And totaling everything up for this week's score, I come up with a not great 19 out of 40 for this week's episode. What about you?
Yeah, and I am just 1 point off from that at an 18 out of 40.
When we're in the teens, it's never a good episode. So dare we talk about rewatchability for this week's episode? Because I guess the argument can be made, as we've already stated multiple times. So Rubber Band Man does make a return later on in at least one more episode, if not two. This is just the introduction to the Onyx and Puff characters, who also make several returns. Onyx makes a return actually in the Justice League episode. So there's, you know, some long-term storytelling with these two characters. So where do you land on rewatchability for this episode that we both graded in the teens?
Well, and again, I didn't hate watching this. Like, I think if I was just sitting on my couch watching this, it wouldn't be one I would go back to very often. I think when it comes to the Rubber Band Man stuff, I guess the only thing is I know they do a little bit of follow-up on the relationship with Sharon in the later seasons. So maybe you can make the argument there. But as far as him sort of, and of course he sort of rehabilitates himself and eventually becomes, a hero in his own right in this series, spoiler alert. But I think that's sort of followed up on enough in other episodes, explain what happened to you enough, they explain what happened enough that I don't necessarily know that I would say this is must watch, even in the realm of, you know, specific to these characters. I guess this might be the only episode where they explain what Puff's powers are, so you could make the argument there.
That's fair. Yeah, well, depends on whether or not those powers continue to change and adapt based on what the storytelling needs for them to do, sort of like how Static's powers. I swear I thought when the fire broke out, I was like, all right, how are they going to make it so that electricity somehow puts out a fire? Let's see how they figure this one out here. I was like, what could they possibly do here to make it so that electricity somehow cancels out this raging, roaring flames? Instead he just used it to, you know, make a giant hole in the wall for people to run out. So, okay, that's fine. I guess going back to rewatchability in the grand scheme of things, it's not pivotal to the DCAU as a whole. So that one gets an X. It's not a rewatchability for, you know, it's not rewatchable or a need to watch for those reasons. It's not an episode that I myself enjoyed. Didn't hate it, as you said. This isn't Unity. This isn't one of those that can be stricken from canon altogether that we've talked about. Didn't get a single digit score from us, so you know it must not be that bad. If you're interested in seeing which of those episodes we have scored in single digits, you can check those out in our bad episode jar section at dcaureview.com. But with that said, I guess you're somewhat right. So if you're interested in learning more about and following the thread of these characters, specifically reoccurring characters that come back later on, yeah, I guess you can watch this one. And it's not terrible to get through. It's not terribly exciting, but it's not the worst thing to do. So maybe put it on and scroll through your phone or something like that while you're watching it, if you want to get the highlights or something. But I guess this isn't even a one thumb up rewatch. It's like a half thumb up rewatch for me, I guess. That's a first.
It's a real Orange Cassidy thumbs up.
That's right. We got that crossover.
There you go.
I guess thumbs up. So
that's right. Yeah. I think that's fair. Like we said, there's definitely some threads here that are, this is definitely like the ball joint of the Rubber Band Man arc. So, but it does feel like most of it could be explained in about 30 seconds. So you could probably get away with it without watching it, but
just read the don't go to the IMDb page. If you're trying to figure out what happened, don't read the synopsis there. Go to the DCAU wiki or just, you know, tell your friends to listen to this episode and you'll kind of get a little bit more entertainment than you would if you actually watch the episode. So
agreed.
All right, Liam, that will bring us to the end of this week's episode. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Don't forget, if you are listening to us on a podcast app that allows you to leave a review, we would love for you to drop a 5-star review for us and leave a little note letting people know. A written review helps us out also, kind of lets the people reading potential reviews. I don't know who reads reviews. I mean, occasionally I'll go on Apple Podcasts and check out what people say about certain podcasts. If you're, you know, if there are people out there that read them and interested in giving it a try, that helps us out. If there's specific things that you like about our podcast, leave a little written review there. I'm sure it helps the algorithm too, when it's more than just a star rating per se. And also, don't forget, subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app. We're also available, of course, on Spotify, Anchor, Google Podcasts, pretty much any of those other podcast apps also. Wherever you listen to them, go ahead and give us a subscribe, get those episodes delivered to you each week. Also, we would love for you to help us out and go and subscribe to our Pod Tower YouTube channel. We're a part of the Pod Tower with our friends from Tim Talk and our friends from Watchtower Database. That is a one-stop shop for some great content from DCAU people, ourselves included. So if you're interested in supporting us, head over there. We're looking to get to 1,000 subscribers. So we're slowly getting there, but we love to build that fan base up as well. If you're feeling extra generous, you can go support the podcast by buying a shirt or a hat. You can head over to dcaureview.com, click on the little store tab at the top. It'll take you to our shop. You can support the podcast that way, if you will, with your dollars. We would very much appreciate that. And now that we've got all of the shilling out of the way, Liam, I would love to talk about our preview for next week's episode as we continue here with our month of Static Shock.
That's right. We've got we will be continuing on with Static next week with one more episode this time around from the first season. And we will be, in fact, reviewing the episode Tantrum, which has an interesting villain and a pretty interesting subplot involving Virgil sort of dealing with some troubles, some emotional issues. So it'll be a really interesting episode to take a look at next week.
On a very special episode of Static Shock.
That's right.
Looking forward to it. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
We will talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.